Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Josh Brown, it's actually Tuesday. We try and do this on a Monday, the old wind-up, wind you up for the week, all sorts of different gameplay thoughts, news thoughts, different gaming thoughts, but then we ran out of time. We had too much to do, so we had to do this first thing on a Tuesday morning. It's 9 a.m. where I am. Josh Brown, how are you doing?
Well, this is it. I'm doing all right. Sometimes we wind the week up, and sometimes the week winds us up, and today that's definitely happened, and definitely happened yesterday, but it's fine. We're up, we're fresh, we're having our coffee. It's all good, man.
This might actually be the way to do it, to be honest. I know that none of us like the morning that much, especially on a Monday, but maybe we should embrace this approach. Maybe we get the coffees in, maybe we just fire it off, hit the record button and just see what the hell happens. Maybe that's just the way.
I'm in my dressing gown all day anyway, so it doesn't matter to me.
The gown life. I probably should have said my name. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown. For the wind-up, we always round up all the latest talking points in the industry. And to be honest, it's a flat month. So me and you have kind of been going back to some old school games, and I thought we'd do a bit of a news sandwich for this week's podcast, opening and ending on some big talking points, and then having a bit of stuff that we've been playing in the middle, because me and you have both kind of lost our mind. I've gone back to the N64, you've gone back to the PlayStation 2, but we'll open and end on some news. So you were saying before recording that you wanted to talk at me about PlayStation VR 2. Now, you are the most enthusiastic VR person I know, so take it away.
This is the thing, right? When we were coming back to work after such an intense year of playing a lot of games, talking about a lot of games, doing end-of-the-year stuff, I'd kind of come back wondering if I had lost a little bit of spark, if I had lost a little bit of the old passion for the old video games. Because, you know, there was not much over Christmas that I managed to get around to, and there's not much big coming out until February, right? That's when all of the games kick off with Elden Ring, Horizon, etc. However, then the news that PSVR 2 is happening dropped, and obviously, you know, Sony revealed all of the specs about it, and it just got me unbelievably excited. If I could have put down a pre-order deposit for that thing at that time, I absolutely would have. I think this is the thing I'm most excited about this year, because the specs of it are insane, and I'm a huge advocate for VR in general. But the thing is, I've not even touched like the good stuff. I've only had PSVR. And the fact that that first primitive, in comparison to today's beta kit, like won me over so much is just absolutely tantalizing for the prospect of this follow-up.
That's so classic us, because the PSVR didn't win me over. I got it for No Man's Sky. I had a lovely time opening and shutting the cockpits over and over again. I thought that was great. But the technology itself, it was just, it didn't work for me. Like overall, it didn't convince me to the point where, you know, I was playing super hot and I was trying to, like, I think I talked to Jules about this on Friday because we got asked about the PSVR too. But like when there's stuff on the ground, you're trying to pick up different weapons, you're trying to move through a 3D space and you're trying to just let go of the reality that you're in VR and just like, you know, like crouching and stuff, duck shots, fire back, return fire, like play an action game in VR. And the tracking would just get so lost off, and all of a sudden my arm is floating away from me slowly and whatever. Which is to say that when I finally had to go on the Oculus Quest 2, which I think is one of the newest ones, one of our editors, Dan Durkin's, got it, and he was like, have a little go with this, Resident Evil 4. That immediately got me going like, oh, this is it. This is exactly what I'm supposed to be feeling. And all of a sudden my brain is like overriding all my senses, making me like duck stuff that's coming at me and making me feel like I'm in someone else's body, and I'm like losing my sense of balance and everything. And it was all those things that you hear about that VR puts you in a different space that for me PSVR never did.
Well, this is it. I mean, like I said, the PSVR really was a primitive bit of kit, you know, like even the controllers weren't custom just made for lights. VR. they literally just move controllers from the PS3 era, like retrofitted. Like that thing was a proof of concept, kind of hobbled together by like duct tape.
It's like the Homer Simpson car. You know, like just sort of just make it work. We'll just try it. Figure it out later.
It really was, but it sold well enough. And there are still worthwhile experiences to have on the PSVR. You know, some of my favorite gaming experiences ever came from that machine, you know, playing Resident Evil 7 in VR, playing even Russia Blood, the Until Dawn game, you know, there's a lot of really cool things you can do on that platform. But yeah, like you said, it had a lot of issues and a lot of issues that stopped even me, like a big advocate for it, from playing it more often. Like it lives in a cupboard right now because it's such a nightmare to set up. Like there's so many different wires, you know, you need an adapter to even use it on the PS5. Mm-hmm. And thankfully the PSVR 2 is cutting most of that out. This time around, it's just a single wire, a USB-C cable, and that's all you need. You just literally plug in and play in a much better way.
Do you think they're missing a trick with that, though? That was my initial thing where I was reading down the specs and it was like, oh, it's going to have very similar tracking to like the more premium headsets and everything, but it's not wireless. And I was like, that sucks, because like the thing, I hate the setup side of it. I hate any setup. If I have to go up and set something up to jump into a game, like that puts me off. So I want to, like, especially with VR, I want to be able to just put the headset on and it just works. I think if you still have a cable, that's still going to get in the way for a lot of people.
I've seen kind of like two schools of thought on this. One is very much what you were saying there, and the other is that like the USB cable kind of facilitates the higher whatchamacallit, like the higher specs that the machine actually has.
Like lower latency and higher resolution and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like lower latency, a much higher resolution. You know, you've got HDR in there, you've got all this rumble feedback and stuff. And for me, wireless would of course be amazing, especially as it frees you up from where you can actually play it around your home or whatever. Mm-hmm. But one cable in comparison to the jumble of cables that we had previously,
it is
to
better.
Me, that still is a huge step up and, you know, not necessarily the end of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because for me, it was just that thing, because the whole thing with VR that terrifies me is that I don't know if someone's not broke into my house and is standing right behind me about to, you know, do some things. And so I don't like that. And so like, if you still have a cable, like for me, it's like you can't get fully lost in the experience because you're stumbling around, you're maybe hitting the cable, you're realizing that you're in this, you're still in the real world. It's like the problem that 3D had in cinemas where like the more effective it is, the more you have to then recenter yourself in the world again to remind yourself that there's not something jumping out the screen or whatever. And I think it was Francis Ford Coppola pointed that out, which I always thought was a good point for 3D in cinemas. But if we're going to get lost in VR stuff, then I want to get completely lost in it. I want to have the, you know, just a headset, have it wireless, just give me the wireless controllers and let me just play this thing. And I think I'm curious when we get there, because that is where Oculus has gone. And I remember when they first announced their first wireless headset and I was like, cool, that feels like the future. I'll not be getting PSVR 2 straight away. I think I'm just curious whether the mainstream is there for it yet. Like obviously Sony are doubling down on it. It felt like for a while, there was a whole thing where Jim Ryan was asked about it a couple of years ago. And he was like, he said something about like, oh, we'll get back to that if we ever do or something like that. It was a really vague statement.
Yeah.
And I think we reported on it being like, they've just killed that because clearly they're not committed to it. And then all of a sudden they're doing PSVR 2, they're doubling down. They've got Horizon Call of the Mountain and they're sort of doing more first party stuff. But I guess, what do you think they need to do on the game side to like kind of crack the mainstream?
Just make more. Like the thing about PSVR was that there just weren't enough experiences for it. Like there were definitely a handful, you know, Iron Man VR was a fun time. We had The Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners, and a bunch of other like experiences across the years, but nothing like regular, nothing that would make you get it out every couple of months or so. And with PSVR 2, there's already a lot of games that they can port over that didn't come to the original PSVR. For instance, Resident Evil 4, like you mentioned there, or Half-Life Alyx, of course, is the big one.
That might be a big one, yeah.
So I think for them to hit the ground running, they need to have those games that are already out at launch with the promise of new material, like stuff like this Horizon game or whatever else they have from their first party. You know, I would love to see Resident Evil 8 be ported over into proper VR for this. I think that would be incredible. But yeah, I just think they need more games for it, and hopefully that is possible now. Hopefully this thing sells, and with the kind of proof in the pudding from all of these other different headsets that are currently out there, hopefully there's enough of an install base to justify spending this money on these experiences.
One last thing I have for me is, like, do you think that VR overall as a medium, as a collection of developers making stuff for VR, have nailed down a way of moving in VR? Because I feel like for the longest time it was, well, we're doing this thing where you sort of look over there and you sort of put, like, you're going to teleport to where you're going to go. And then some people started going, well, we're going to move in increments. So it's almost like Mario 64. You're moving in like chunks of like 40 degrees, like to turn. And then other people were like, no, it's a one-to-one movement. And I feel like we've had about four or five different approaches to just movement in VR, and I feel like that's one thing that needs to be nailed down before we can do everything else.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like you said, there are so many different ways that developers do it now. For me, I do like the ones that give you complete freedom, or as close to complete freedom as you can get. You know, like the Walking Dead Saints and Sinners is so good because you're in this kind of small open area and you're, you know, climbing into houses, you're finding your way around these environments. And that's the same as Resident Evil 4 as well. Mm-hmm. Resident Evil 7,
yes.
Where you have full control over your character's ability to walk. But, you know, sometimes it makes you use a controller. Other times you can use it with the actual, you know, custom-made VR controllers. And they do kind of need to sort that out. For me, I do want to see a future, though, where VR worlds are fully, you know, explorable, with your own controllers and at your own will. I think that is... if they can nail that, that would be awesome.
Because I've long said that I'm waiting for their dual analog stick moment. And I feel like that is going to be with... because it's the kind of controllers that, like, the Vive has, that obviously the Oculus has, and now PSVR 2 has, which now seems to be the way that you do it. Like, that is the analog sticks where you're sort of holding, like, almost like a... it's like a per-hand thing that wraps around your hand. It can track different fingers. It can track whether you're trying to grab stuff and things like that. And I think that's, like... maybe that just is the way to do it. And the Move controller was just never going to work. And the idea of, like, a wand controller was just never going to be the standard. And, like, we're approaching a standard, like, level, like, bar, like, entry wise for the price for the tech itself, and then obviously the actual controls and stuff. It's exciting stuff, but I don't know, I'm waiting for something, like you said, to be like, for them to make more, and them to make something where you look at it and go like, I need to play that because I fundamentally can't get that anywhere else. And then the tiny snippet they showed of Call of the Mountain, which I laughed at because I was like, they were like, oh, we're going to show you a snippet of the new game. It was what, 3 seconds literally? Like, it was nothing. So much stuff is like that, where it's kind of just on rails, looking around, how immersed are you, like, you're sort of cranking up the visuals and not giving us too many gameplay things. Whereas the thing that blew me away was Resident Evil 4 on the Oculus Quest. It was all the custom animations they put into that, all the different ways you can reload a gun and pick out your knife, and like, you're literally punching in your name on the typewriter to save and stuff like that. And I was like, if you do that, then that gets me in way more. That should get, like, the hardcore, the cynical gamer people in a lot more, who aren't just, you know, like, the whole thing about you're just strapping a TV to your face and then going from there. So, like, I hope they do more with that stuff.
Totally. I mean, I fully agree. I would hazard a guess. I mean, I would say, Scott Tilford, that those experiences you're describing are already out there in some form. But yeah, they certainly...
And not in No Man's Sky, mate. You can actually tell a lie. You can open the little hatch thing and then push a button, and that ignites the thing so you fly your ship.
Listen, if all I had to do in any VR game for 9 hours straight was throw a little rubber ball up in the air and catch it with the same hand over and over again, I would still be on this podcast saying it was the future of gaming and it was the best thing I've ever seen. Easily impressed, to be fair.
No, but that's the thing. Like, at the absolute core, that's what I want. I don't want super flashy visuals that almost have to be on rails because they can't render the whole thing in full 3D at all times, you know, to account for where you might look. It's sort of, I want something that I can get immersed in. And I was quite surprised just how effective Resident Evil 4 was just on ostensibly PlayStation 2 graphics. So obviously it's been upscaled, but those character models, the world design, it's not Last of Us 2. Like, you know, it is still old school, but you belong there in a way that I feel all other PSVR stuff hasn't done, just because of the one-to-one tracking and the way that it controls and all those different animations. So we'll see what happens to PlayStation VR 2. Obviously, there's a whole year. There's so much stuff happening in the next few months. And I think, has PSVR 2 got a vague release date? Is it just later this year?
The rumors are all pointing towards a drop this year, which is really exciting. The rumors say it's apparently in full production, maybe for a Q2 2022 release. So hopefully by the end of the year, this thing will actually be out.
Okay. I'll tell you what else is in full production, my friend. The Matrix, left, right, and center. I've seen such a massive cultural revival of The Matrix to the point where even the CEX adverts I'm getting before YouTube videos have two phones fighting each other as Neo and one of the agents. So
I need to just completely ruin your life right now, because, like you said, The Matrix is in this revival. I recently got the 4K Blu-ray edition, like I know that you did, and I was watching The Matrix 1 for the first time with my partner last week, right? And we got to that bit, you know, the bit on the rooftop where Neo does the dodge and Trinity's there, and she turned to me and said, this has been ruined for me because I've seen this so many times on the CEX adverts, because she hadn't seen it before. So that's it, CEX, thanks for that. Ruined it.
I'm going to DM your partner partner and say, no, the CEX should not be the authority on the cinema moments. But that is the thing when you go back to that, because I hadn't seen the movie in a good few years either, even though I lived on it, having it on repeat. That was the first DVD I ever bought back in the day. I traded my PlayStation 1 and all my games in for one DVD back in the day after I got my PS2, and it was The Matrix. And so that's the thing, going back to all those scenes, kind of realizing just how influential it was and how much of a unique identity that thing has. Like, I know that a lot of people at the minute have been saying that The Matrix trilogy for our age group was the Star Wars of our generation. I would argue it's Lord of the Rings, but whatever, they were both there. And I feel like there are big pockets of people who remember them. Obviously, there's a mix towards the sequels, but there's a lot of people who are like almost closeted Matrix fans going like, no, there are a lot of things to love about this trilogy. And I think in the modern corporately fueled version of Hollywood, where there's safe bets left, right, and center, Matrix as a trilogy is like a hell of a risky thing that I just love going back to. Like, yeah, you know, you can argue whatever in the pros and cons, but I love that trilogy so much. I think revisiting it's been really, really fun.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't want to sound like an old geezer, but I was watching it and I was just thinking, like, I can't believe this was ever made.
It was better in my day.
Yeah. I can't believe something this inventive was ever made. And I think that's also reflected in the, not to make this all about the movie, you know, we've got games to talk about, but I think that's reflected in the movie as well, where, because so much of like the first half is just Morpheus explaining what the film is to the audience and Neo. Like, there's so much of that because there are so many terms, so many things that audiences just like weren't, you know, like shown. Well, back in 1999 or whatever.
Yeah, that was one of the things, because that's the thing. Like, there's been so many retrospective pieces about what a big deal it was at the time. And I remember that big deal. And it's like, that's all the marketing was built around, you know, what is The Matrix? The marketing was very leading. And you had to go see the movie to find out what it was, which obviously was a tactic back then that, like, you know, you got it, like all the Independence Day stuff, and Godzilla was just marketed on, like, you know, his foot is as big as this billboard and stuff like that. But like, a lot of people were just saying that, like, no movie had done, you know, like video games or coding or hacking or whatever, like, believably back then. It was all like really weird attempts doing it, like Lawnmower Man or like weird VR stuff that just didn't really get it right. And then Matrix came along. It was so fully formed. It was so confident, had such a unique visual style, and it just flew. And obviously the score was so recognizable as well. And it's just, I love The Matrix, Josh. I know you do as well, but I love all things Matrix. But speaking of all things Matrix.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Your latest thing, we need like a little a segment name for HD upscale Brown, where he just goes back to the PlayStation 2 and revisits something that looks better than ever. How is Enter the Matrix in 2022?
You know what, it's pretty decent, you know, like Enter the Matrix is actually all right. I tried to play it a few years ago and it felt too clunky and I didn't actually enjoy it, but going to it now in this obviously revived Matrix mood, this new Matrix era that we're all in, it really works, and I'm getting more out of it now as an adult than I did when I was younger, because when I was younger, I'm sorry to say this, but I just absolutely hammered that start button to skip all of the cutscenes because I had a thing when I was younger about live action stuff in video games that I just couldn't get over. I hated it when they put it in the Lord of the Rings.
Well, even though they shot everything extra to be like a separate movie.
I know, but if you, especially looking at it now on like a HD TV, like it's so small and kind of like so pixelated that it's so hard to watch. But anyway, the point is that I'm enjoying it now. I'm enjoying more about Niobe and Ghost, and it's just fun to play. It's fun to have like all of the iconography in a game and more control of your character than I remembered. Like it's quite a button intensive game, and I mean that you have to like press like three different things to do like a move, but when you do that move it feels very satisfying and you pull off a lot more than I remembered, and it's just been a lot of fun.
Well, I remember the button, I'm sure it's on the shoulder buttons, how you strafe left and right, so if you want to do like a cartwheel, it's like hold that and then you press like jump while that, you press something else to pick up the gun while you're cartwheeling to try and do the Neo move.
You have to hold, to do a cartwheel and shoot at the same time, you have to hold L2 or R2 to strafe, you have to hold L1 to put your focus bullet time mode on, and then you need to press square to do like the cartwheel itself.
I'm sure there's like another button to pick up the gun if you try, because you know when the second cartwheel, when Neo picks up the gun, I think that was like a whole thing, because I remember that was like such a glorious time. Like Enter the Matrix, like, was one of the, that was some of the most I've ever looked forward to a game, and I loved Enter the Matrix. I played that thing over and over and over again, and so like I love that stuff. And obviously the one thing that you couldn't do was the bullet time dodge. Like you couldn't do the lean back and dodge bullets thing that Neo does, because I guess that's like his signature move. And then when they did Path of Neo, and you get to the bit on top of the rooftop, there's just a button for it, so you can just do that dodge over and over again. You're like running around on the roof like backwards as if you're constantly doing like a limbo. And but how's it been, I guess, like, because the sound design, the production value of Enter the Matrix, it was just a part of that movie rollout. So like, does it still feel pristine, or sorry, premium now?
It doesn't, it doesn't. Like, I'm kind of surprised by how detailed the character models and the 3D environments are. I think the animations in particular are kind of mind-blowing for what else was happening at the time. Like I said, they're so detailed in a lot of ways.
I guess it was all motion captured, and like all the sound effects that's the thing. The sound of Matrix fighting is unlike anything else.
Yes.
Like, literally unlike anything else.
You know, there's that classic story of Ewan McGregor going to the Star Wars set and doing the zhroom and the vroom when he had the lightsaber. If I was ever cast in the Matrix movie, I'd be doing the... with my legs and hands, you know. I couldn't stop myself because it's so ingrained into my brain at this point. And hearing those sounds on Enter the Matrix has been such a joy. And I'll tell you this, Scott Tilford, it might be the biggest bargain of a century, because I actually bought it a few years ago, like you said, so I was fishing it out of my drawer. And I realized that when I bought it, all the way back in 2014, by the way, because it had the receipt still in the box.
It's been sitting there for 8 years.
8 years. Eight years has been sitting in my drawer. And it only cost me 35 pence at the time. 35 pence for an unreal time.
The thing is that, because I'm gonna, unless you have another point to say about the Matrix, I'm going to use this as a segue into HD upscaling consoles in general, because I love my upscaled N64. I got it for my 30th. And just going back to those old games with an HD upscaler so that they're as pristine as possible. And I've been revisiting WWF No Mercy, because I'm back into wrestling now. I'm watching AEW. I'm watching Hangman Page doing the Buckshot Lariat. It's a good time. And so I know that's an entire other language. But point being... there was a time when everybody was playing wrestling games, and most of it, I think, was the SmackDown series. That was the one that really took off, mainly because the PlayStation and especially the PS2 were such big deals. And I think that obviously they came alongside, you know, SmackDown, Just Bring It, Know Your Role, and Here Comes the Pain. With Here Comes the Pain being the one that everyone holds up. But there was always a contingent of people saying No Mercy is the best wrestling game of all time. And it's funny going back to it, because I immediately see why. Like, it's such a well-designed game. It's immediately up there with Here Comes the Pain. Mainly because of the amount of options that you have, like the amount of different ways that you can move people around the ring. I don't know if you played the old school ECW games, like Hardcore Revolution or whatever.
No, well, this is the thing. I used to think of myself as something of a wrestling game connoisseur, but really, the ones that I played to death and loved were the ones you mentioned there, you know, Just Bring It and Here Comes the Pain, especially, and then into the SmackDown versus Raw games. I think my last proper one was 2007. That's the last one I played to death, though. Pretty I have dabbled after that.
Yeah, because they moved all the controls and it was like right analog stick for grapples. And it was like, what are you guys doing? This is horrible. But like, yeah, I mean, my thing was, it was the SmackDown series. And it was, I had a couple on the Game Boy, and it was like, I had WrestleMania or something on like my Game Boy Advance. But that's the thing. You go back to No Mercy, and I know the ECW games came after because it was on PS1. But there's an approach to wrestling games that is, when it's done arcadey, when you can just do the biggest, stupidest moves, you can set up all these different cool spots and athletic over the top stunts and whatever. And then not trying to be more like a simulation. Like the newer games are just trying to be a simulation. Everything's slower. Mm-hmm. Everything is just less responsive. It's all about working the crowd and whatever. And it's just, it's more like trying to convince you it's real. And I'm just like, the fun is kayfabe. The fun is being over the top. Like the fun is just, is pretending that it's like over the top and that they're all superheroes and whatever. And No Mercy has a lot of those parts in that the later ECW games would have that SmackDown would ditch, where you can sort of like drag a person into a specific spot. You can get them into a grapple and move and stop their head off a turnbuckle and then go into another move. And like you can chain stuff together in a way that I like SmackDown got away from and then slowly put back in again. But as someone who grew up on the SmackDown games, I remember every year it being a big deal, seeing if you could break the announcer's table or seeing if you could, do things like that. No Mercy has all that stuff in. Like, I was, like, amazed. I always have this when I go back to a really old game, just because you don't, you know, you're not caught up in the hype cycle. Retroactively, you never had it. So you're just sort of playing something that's been held up as a classic, and then you sort of go in and go, okay, I wonder if this still holds up. And in No Mercy's case, just seeing what that move list could do, there's a bunch of stuff in there that I remember being fan demands for SmackDown that took them years to implement, and one of them being the announcer's table. And I just remember like looking it up, and there was a button to put a guy on the table, and I just did that next to the announcer's table, put a dude on and rock bottomed him through the announcer's table. And I was like, this, if this was me in 1996, I think I would have exploded. Like, I was like, this is incredible. And so, like, I mean, yeah, I know that everybody who played WWF No Mercy, the wrestling game, back in the day knows all this. But and they were probably gritting their teeth at the time, going like, well, all this stuff that you guys now want in SmackDown was always in No Mercy. But I absolutely see... Oh, another thing, why it was a big deal. But another thing is that they have arena entrances, like wider, like camera angles showing the arena and showing the wrestler come in. PS1 didn't get that until on PlayStation 2. Like SmackDown 1 and 2 had that stupid thing where wrestlers would walk in front of their entrance video, and that was all we got. And we were like, oh, the technology, they can't do it. The N64 was doing it years beforehand.
This is why I feel robbed, Scott Till, because like I said, I played wrestling games before then, but the ones on the PlayStation 1 were always unimpressive for me and my brother and my cousin when we used to try and play them.
SmackDown 2, brother.
Well, we played a lot of it, but it didn't quite click and didn't feel like the next level or the closest thing to the actual, you know, watching of the program until it got to the PS2 games, at least for me, especially with, you know, I mean, Here Comes the Pain was like a revolutionary moment of my childhood. I still remember my cousin coming to my house with that game, and I might as well have just burned the other wrestling games that I had at the time, just thrown them out the window.
Also, the thing is, it does tie into the Matrix, because Matrix brought about the idea of 360 cameras in everything. Tiger Woods had one back in the day. You could sort of do a 360 cam before you hit the ball, and Here Comes the Pain let you do the 360 cam during a finisher, or it would let you do that thing where you push a button and it would show the same move from three different angles, so you could sort of capitalize on a slam. No Mercy has that too. Has that years beforehand, and also has a really, really cool finisher system where it's all momentum based, so you can only do your finisher after you've done a chain of moves, or you've done like a few taunts, or you've recovered from an injury, or you're bleeding, or whatever, so that you would like pull off the finisher at the best time in the match. So you put the difficulty up, you end up having these really cool... I had like a 20-minute match as Undertaker against Kane that was just this full-on slobber knocker fest of going through tables and bleeding and doing slams, and eventually I lost eventually, but I was glad to lose because it was a hell of a thing. And going through finishes and kicking out and everything else, and it's just one of those things. I mean, one of the reasons that I'm back into wrestling is because AEW is doing all that old school feel better than like anyone else has for like a decade and a half, and for me anyway. And No Mercy, I think, is the perfect game for that. And I know that the AEW game, which is coming later this year, providing everything stays on course, is apparently taking a lot of influence from No Mercy. I think it is I think it's the same developers.
Okay.
And apparently, what's his face? Kenny Omega, who's one of the wrestlers. He's the head of the gaming division as well. Big old nerd. Love Kenny Omega. He's apparently been behind that, saying like No Mercy is one of the greatest games. We should just do one of them, but for AEW. Yeah. And flesh it out. So I'm hella excited. The tiny clip that they've shown of the AEW game had Jungle Boy doing a whole bunch of different chain moves. And I was like, if you can take what was in 1996 and flesh it out and speed it up and whatever, that's going to be game of the year, Josh Brown.
So what you're saying is that in 11 months' time, when we're hashing out what's going to be the game of the year 2022, Horizon Forbidden West is going to get bumped off the top 10 for the AEW wrestling game.
I ain't gonna lie, I am infinitely more excited for the AEW game than I am for Horizon Forbidden West. Like, I just massively. We should end on another piece of news, though, which is the overall conversation around E3. Now, I feel like E3 going away, obviously it's been covered a few times in the last few years. There was a whole bunch of stuff about, obviously, last year's show was cancelled. This year's show has also been cancelled. But one thing that came out, Jeff Grubb, various other insiders sharing it, is that the ESA, the parent company who owned E3, never actually secured any of the physical space that they would have potentially used anyway as of months ago. So it always seemed like they weren't planning on doing an E3 this year, regardless. And I think that's interesting to talk about because so many companies, there was a big old list of the amount of companies that have pulled out of E3, regardless of what the actual event is, who have also have said that they wouldn't be attending. And it includes the likes of Ubisoft, EA, I think it was EA, but it was definitely Ubisoft, and Sega and Konami and et cetera. Point being that all of this is just saying that E3 is ostensibly no more. It's sort of just wilted away without any real fanfare. But I feel like the way that the ESA treat E3 across the last few years, that weird like attempt at a rebrand they had a couple of years ago, where it was all about social chits and monetizing FOMO and getting all the kids in and queue-tainment so we'd have apps when we're in the queues. I feel like the writing was on the wall for a while, but what do you think of all this and what do you think of an industry that doesn't really have an E3, even though we do have Jeff Keighley's all that Summer Games Fest and all that kind of stuff?
Well, that's it. You know, E3 used to be like the biggest and often only game in town when it came to that kind of period of showcases, you know, and now the publishers have diversified in such a way that E3, even if it was happening, and it was happening the way it did 10 years ago, it wouldn't feel as big anyway.
No.
Because, you know, we've got Sony State of Players, we've got Nintendo Directs, we've got even EA's own thing that it does, like, at the same time as E3.
That thing? EA Play?
I think it's called EA Play, but then it suddenly didn't
realize. It's another Madden.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have the developers of Star Wars just be in the crowd and say, we're doing another one. Yeah, but what I was saying was, you know, like E3 has been dismantled over the past few years, and it's kind of like comes as no surprise that it's a slow death rather than a quick turn off. But with all of the publishers and developers that have pulled out anyway over the past few years, that just seems to increase year on year. And we're now, for better or worse, in this era where they're kind of taking their ball home and they're doing their own thing. Like, I kind of don't like that necessarily. I like the big bombastic weekend where we have everyone there. We have
Super
people
Bowl.
Competing against each other for headline space, but they've just sort of realized they don't need to do that. Sony can have its weekend in March or whatever, you know, and show off all of its biggest games, and then Microsoft can do it in June, July, or whatever, and have the exact same thing.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, I mean, you've got, like, there's a whole leak doing the rounds as of this morning that Sony are planning a state of play for the 3rd of February, so I guess we'll see if that comes. But yeah, one of the massive upsides of all these third-party companies, or all these companies in general, realizing that they don't need to fork over six-figure sums to the ESA to show their games once a year, is that they can do either their own live streams, or they can make them part of Jeff Keighley's thing, who, in himself, now has ostensibly two E3s. Like, we have the Summer Games Fest, and then we have the Game Awards later on, and obviously, you can wax and win on the Game Awards, because it's such a back and forward thing of advertising versus the awards themselves, and each year he seems to go in one direction or the other, and it's like it's trying to get that balance right, but there's so much money up for grabs, and I think he's largely at the center of that, and Mr. Jeff Keighley can't say no to putting more adverts in his thing, so I think that's the way that's going to go. But that's always the thing, you know, if E3 goes away, or largely it has gone away, it is replaced by State of Plays, Nintendo Directs, I feel what Xbox's thing is called now, XO3 or whatever it's called, X insert year. You know, there are ways to plug that gap with more regular big reveals, which I am there for. But like you said, you do lose that, oh my God, we're waiting for this big event thing, because it's largely only really Jeff Keighley flying that flag anymore.
Totally. And I mean, you know, the Summer Game Fest was good last year. I genuinely enjoyed it. I had like no expectations for what that was going to be, and I came away like pleasantly surprised. I'm looking forward if that happens again this year. I think it has been announced, though, correct me
if
I'm wrong.
Keighley's been tweeting saying like, oh yeah, we've got 30 odd whatevers we're going to be doing announcements.
Well, there we go. So fortunately, there are still things to look forward to. But yeah, you know, I mean, E3 as an event, as a consumer event as well, I suppose, which it was definitely leaning more towards in the past few years, that does seem like it's going away, not just because of the obvious COVID reasons, but because of just how the industry was going even pre-pandemic, you know? And again, I can only come down to stuff that we've kind of said on this topic before, in that I think it sucks to not have that bombastic weekend, but also we're not really losing anything in terms of how the games are showed off and when the games are showed off, because they're still going to be showed off when they're ready. And sometimes that's going to be better, because then we don't get these vertical slices that take the developers away from the actual development of the game, and we don't have things being hopefully prematurely announced before they're ready.
No, that's a massive point that, if you remove the vertical slice thing, which is just an industry term for, you know, like section of game that is polished away from the main game to like show it off to like audiences and investors and stuff, then maybe that does help with the overall production schedules. But it means we're going to lose all the E3 cringe. It means we'll never have stage demos, or we'll never have like shoutcasters or anything like that ever again.
Dude, that is not true. We are never getting away from the cringe. We might not have E3, but the E3 cringe will follow us, whether it's in Summer Game Fest, whether it's in the EA Play, whether it's even in the State of Play as Nintendo Directs. The cringe is an inherent part of gaming at this point, and we will always have it, whether it's Jeff Keighley, whether it's whoever.
I hope so. I hope that the cringe is eternal. And speaking of the cringe being eternal, we will catch you all next week. This has been this week's Wind-Up. We hope you're suitably wound up for the week. Apologies for missing yesterday's slop, but we'll get back on it next week. We'll catch you next Monday. For now, I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Play Enter the Matrix.
Do and play Path of Neo and WWF No Mercy as well. And we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.